crack, brew crack, zippa dooba dooba, brew crack.
Boom. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Brew Crack. We've got a bit of a different conversation today. I think in the past, we've mostly talked about hops and malt, but today we have something a little bit different. We're going to talk about the unsung hero of beer and the actual thing that kind of makes beer worth drinking, and that is yeast. So joining us today, we've got two new faces that have never been on before. First of all, we've got Rob Hamilton, who is our UK sales manager. Rob looks after all of our wonderful customers over in England and Scotland.
Wales.
And what?
And Wales.
And Wales. Don't forget Wales. I always forget Wales. So you may have seen Rob around some of your breweries or been on the phone with him or on email. So Rob's our main man in the UK. And then we've got Philip from the WHC lab over in, can't say Dublin, in Wicklow, just south of Dublin.
Wicklow.
Yeah, so, and these guys are doing some absolutely fantastic things with yeast and quality control and lab testing. So, let's just jump right in. Philip, if you want to just maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, your background to start, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I'm actually a molecular biologist. So we started the company in 2018. I used to work in the brewing industry in North America, and we saw a bit of a niche that a lot of breweries in North America were using liquid yeast, and the breweries that I worked for in particular were using liquid yeast. When on my travels back home, when you used to be able to travel, a lot of the breweries that I got talking to here, they all use dried yeast and there wasn't any liquid yeast options. And the ones that did use liquid yeast, they were importing it from America or, mostly America. So we saw a niche. Obviously, that was mad air miles with shipping a culture that could be grown anywhere. So I moved back home, started the business. So our main thing is that we provide yeast solutions, and we also have a laboratory here that provides quality control, third-party quality control for breweries that either don't have a lab themselves or don't want to do the testing or just want to outsource it, or they want somebody else to kind of with the technical knowledge to do it. So we do a lot of, in terms of the testing, we do like a lot of newer things that haven't really been seen in the brewing industry before, or have only started, for instance, our microbiology program. Prior to that, a lot of bigger breweries and stuff would have used like agar plates and that sort of stuff. But now we would predominantly only use genetic testing, like PCR testing, which everybody knows PCR testing now because of coronavirus, because that's all that's on the news. So we look genetically for beer spoilers. We look at concentrations. We look at different sequences within the yeast, or say if it's wild yeast, wild bacteria. We can tell you if the species is there. We can also look deeper into the genetic code and see if it's going to be a problem, what the solutions could be. So we do a lot of testing, we do a lot of advising, we do a lot of helping breweries, technical support. On the yeast side, I think at this stage, we've grown over 120 different strains for different breweries. We have a core range of about 20 strains that are really popular. And that our core range is basically the strains that we've selected that we really like. So we have them in all the way up from home brewer size 20 liter batches available in packs up to I think like we've done orders 300 hex, 400 hex. So we basically can offer a service to anyone. And yeah, we ship all over Europe. Lochran's obviously are the main guys to talk to about the malt and the hops. But because they have really good relationships with loads of different breweries, we provide the more technical stuff on the yeast, and then we sell our yeast through them in different countries.
Now, what so the name WHC Lab, where does that come from? I remember when you guys were first getting started and the name was something else. So talk to us about the name for a second.
Yeah, so that's actually really funny because we when we were starting, my business partner now that I met, he was actually starting a hops company. So while he was trying to start a hops company, he got a grant from the Department of Agriculture to basically try and the grant that they got was basically trying to produce ingredients for the brewing industry that weren't available here. So obviously like malt is plenty available in Ireland. So so the hops was something that obviously was grown in the 60s, the 70s. I'm not too sure about the 80s. I would have known this all ages ago, but so a lot of the, almost all the hops that were grown in Ireland were grown for Guinness, like Diageo. And the industry was quite small, and I think it was fairly rootless because there was only a couple of farmers, and I think by the end there was only one farmer that was doing it, and they'd be growing like Fuggles, Northern Brewer, you know, really traditional hop varieties. Yeah. And the guy that used to do it said like he used to be pretty rootless because whoever the brewmaster was, or from Guinness, or the purchasing manager, he'd come out at the end of the season and, you know, he'd sniff the different hops and then he'd be like yay or nay. But unlike today where there's like loads of different breweries that you can sell stuff to, you're literally just depending on one company. So if they said nay, that's your whole crop, your whole year, that's all your sales gone for the whole year. And then they had a storm and all the hop poles came down in a certain field. And I think at that stage he was like, I'm just panning it completely. So we actually started looking at, so the idea was that when we started was like, we had a grant that it was different brewing ingredients, agriculturally. So we obviously had the yeast in, well, I came back and I had the yeast in mind, and my business partner was very keen on the hops because he comes from like farming background and stuff like that. So we actually did like breeding trials because Ireland's so wet, and obviously the demand is for like less traditional hop varieties. So we were trying to look, and we were using different rootstocks from different countries that we could get hold of to see would any varieties that had never been grown in Ireland, would any of them either work, or were they really good, or you know, like would they suit the flavor profile for the modern brewer, modern craft brewer, I suppose. So that went on for, this was at the same time we were starting off with the yeast and stuff like that. So it was basically like a giant breeding trial. And it got to a stage where it was just, it was like a little bit, the yeasts and the quality control were doing really well. And we were having really good feedback, and like a lot of starting a small business, like the cap, you only have a certain amount of capital, you can only grow at a certain rate. So keeping the hops thing going. And another thing about the hops is that you pretty much don't get any crop for like 3 or 4 years while you have all the overheads. So we kind of had to just put a hammer in the nail and just say, look, this is the ingredient that we're focusing on. This is the one that we can bring to the Irish, the European brewing scene. I'm a scientist at the end of the day. I'm pretty much came fairly apparent quite quickly that I wasn't a farmer. So it was fun. So like, to answer your question, it's the Wicklow Hop Company was the, when the company was formed, was the name of the company. So we shortened that to WHC Lab when we rebranded. So that's a really long-winded explanation anyway. So feel free to edit out what you want.
No, that's a fantastic explanation. So yeah. Like, I know whenever I moved over to Ireland, it's something that you touched on. And I think it's something that happened all across Europe. When I moved over here from America, I came from an environment where like, I never used dried yeast. Like everything was wet pitches grown to a specific pitch size. And this is a question for both of you maybe, because I know that Rob probably comes from a background as well in brewing where you're pitching either US05 or SO4 and that's what you've got. Maybe some safe lager 3470, but like the options are growing, especially with companies like yourself that are like pushing the boundaries of liquid yeast. What do you guys think that is bringing to the brewer? Like what is improving for the brewer to be able to have a wide variety of yeast?
Okay, I'll go first then. So I suppose, yeah, what you touched on basically was a couple of years ago, people were using US05, and then the really interesting thing would be what different hops they would use, what different concentrations of hops they would use. So the malt and the yeast were just a background thing, and then the hops were the things that played the center stage. So I suppose yeast in particular, now I can't really talk that much about hops or about malt, but yeast in particular was something that was kind of took a background role, whereas now I think it's much more either a supporting role, as in you get better biotransformation. If you're using, I don't know, is it a Zacker that you get the real pineapple-y flavor from? Yeah, so like if you're going for a Zacker and you like that pineapple flavor, right, you can go and you can select a specific yeast that also gives a pineapple flavor, and you could make the beer super pineapple-y, you know, twice as much of pineapple-y as if you just use US05 and a Zacker. So you can either get the yeast to play a supporting role, but then now you also have this kind of culture of people that are actually using the yeast to play center stage. So like, you know, if they're doing a stout or something like that, now people, instead of using a really kind of bland yeast type, they can use one that actually creates a bit of an ester profile. Same with IPAs, double IPAs, like, you know, like even in the branding and marketing of beers now, people are, before they might have only kind of said what hops they were in, but now you see like breweries are mentioning what sort of yeast they're using. Then we have, you know, a lot of breweries are using blends, like we sell a lot of blends, so they might like what they get character from this yeast. They get a character, you know, they can't really decide what character they want, or they want the two different characters, or they want the three different characters, so they're using that to create a flavor profile that would have been missing before. So now, instead of kind of just being a background ingredient that just turns wort into beer, you know, produces alcohol, it's now in the recipe creation, which basically, you know, it creates so much more spectrum of stuff that you can do with your recipe and beer. So I think it's really exciting time. And there's so many, like both dried and liquid, there's so many different new types of yeast. And there's people are really thinking about yeast now in recipe creation. Like sometimes people, like I know before, like you guys brought new hops in, say like Strata or whatever last year. I think that was the first time it's been in Europe. Was it last year? Yeah. So you guys brought in those hops and they're really interesting. And people obviously were designing those beers to showcase those hops because those hops were new. Whereas now the same thing is happening with yeast where, you know, like we might have a new strain or we might release a new strain or it might be something completely different, and people are brewing a beer or designing a recipe with just that strain in mind as the center stage. So there's more of a level playing field with ingredients, I think, going forward, hopefully.
And what about you, Rob? Like you're probably from a more traditional pub brewing background. What do you think yeast is bringing to the table now that we have options that are more than two or three dried strains that you just fuck into the tank at the end of the brew?
Yeah, it's kind of gone full circle again. I started off using wet yeast in open top fermenters, and you just crop and reuse. But then the bigger the brewery got, the more the yeast actually struggled to keep up with the brewing eventually. It also got to the point where people just wanted that kind of fairly crisp, clean IPA time rather than the traditional ale route. So yeah, so US05 was then used quite a lot. As you say, it was easy. You just throw it in, let it go. And especially with everyone moving from open top fermenters to conicals, it made kind of crop your yeast a lot more difficult. You need more kit than you used to have to do it. Of course, most little breweries don't have the money to then go out and buy more kit with. So yeah, you packed of US05, I think, were just the easiest thing for the majority of small breweries to use. If we then used wet yeast occasionally, and we could only do it occasionally because we used to have to import it, and the carriage charges on importing the yeast on top of the price of the yeast meant you'd only do it occasionally because it would just add so much money to the cost of the beer. You couldn't do it regularly. Or we couldn't, the size of brewery we were and the place we were kind of in the market. So now people are using wet yeast again, but also you've now got more options in your dry packets, which I think is great for a lot of the smaller breweries. Yeah, you just say, yeah, your dad lager, SO4, US05, and some kind of wheat yeast in a packet, and that would have been your only options, pretty much. So I think it's great now you can get some more varieties in the dry yeast for a lot of the little breweries.
Nice. Well, I think that it's one thing, especially with the importance and market domination of hazy IPAs these days, which is obviously fantastic for our business with hops like Strata and Azaka and El Dorado and Idaho 7 that we deal with through Crosby hops and indie hops, and then the New Zealand stuff with Hop Revolution and Nelson and Mochueca. But I think people definitely consumers, but maybe some brewers even don't really think about the role that yeast plays in those flavor profiles. Can you talk about that a little more, Philip? I know you touched on the some yeast throwing off pineapple esters, but how much of a role is yeast playing in some of these flavors that people are trying to achieve?
I'd actually, if we just specifically talk about like New England IPAs, I'd say the yeast actually provides, I would hazard, well, I suppose it would play as an important role as the hops, because like if you're drinking New England IPA, you're looking for like a fruity character, you're looking for a soft mouth feel, you know, a bit of body. So I think it's basically a really good New England IPA is the sum of all four ingredients, because like the water profile is just as important as everything else. But yeast specifically, when you're choosing a yeast, it depends what sort of percentage beer you would use. Like some have different attenuations. So like a lower attenuation would be really important if you're trying to make a table beer or session IPA, which are, you know, like session New England IPA. Whereas if you can look at more attenuating New England style yeast for like if you're doing like a dipper or like a triple IPA, because you don't want the beer to be too sweet, where it's kind of You know, like it's kind of overpoweringly sweet. I don't know if I don't know what way to describe it. Like more savory or something like that. So you would look at attenuation, then flavor profile. So do you want to get a grapefruit kind of flavor? Do you want to get you know, like we touched on pineapple. I'm just having some, you know, like tropical fruits, you know, like some thrown off kind of an apple kind of characteristic. So like if there's so many different yeasts, both liquid and dried now, that throw off so many different flavors, especially at different temperatures. So you could use one yeast at one temperature, use it at a different temperature, and you're getting much different flavor profile. The other thing is a lot of these yeast throw off, you know, like glycerol. So you get like the mouthfeel of the New England IPA. Some are more glycerol producing than others. Then another thing you have to think about with the yeast selection is like the biotransformation capability of the yeast. So like biotransformation is a bit of a buzzword that everybody throws around, but it is quite important because it's how the yeast, the flavor profiles that you're getting from the hops, the yeast does interact with the hop profile, which can put, you know, if you get really good biotransformation, it can really push the beer into another level. So that the amount of hops that you're using, you know, you're getting the most out of them as well. So you're getting that really good stable flavor profile. You're getting like enhanced flavor profile from your dry hop, all that sort of stuff, because you know yourself, like people spend so much money on the ingredients at the moment that they want to get the most out of it. They want to get the best flavor profile that they can possibly get. And I said the other thing you think about is some yeasts are non-flocculating, some are flocculating. So some breweries like a flocculating yeast might suit them better because they want to really harvest and reuse the yeast as easy as possible, and use it, you know, like very, very easily, repitchability. It also depends what type of tanks they use. Like, so they'd be going for a top cropping yeast, or do they want a yeast that's easy harvest off the bottom of a cone? So there's so much stuff that can go into yeast selection, that it is kind of becoming like a niche kind of thing that like nearly every brewery now, they either know what they're looking for, or sometimes they just need help and they're saying, look, I'm making this beer. What do you think would work for that? Or this is the way our brewery set up. What yeast do you think would work for us? But the good thing about it is there's such a good selection now that it's not one size fits all, you know, like tick a box and yeah, this is the one that you use. So like we can do individual yeasts and blends for different breweries. So it's, as I said before, it's a really exciting time.
Do you feel like, I know whenever you're using a dry yeast like US05 or SO4, like it's kind of foolproof. Like people know what to expect. With US05, you're not going to cast much diacetyl or all flavors. How do you think brewers are dealing with and reacting to the problems that may come up with either working with a new yeast or working with a yeast that has the potential to throw off flavors? What's your perception on that? I know we've all had a few New England IPAs that are just absolutely smitten with diacetyl.
Yeah, so that is the diacetyl from the New England IPAs. It's generally from the dry hop, but a lot of the hop creep, so the, you know, the yeast doesn't have time to clean up from the product of that hop creep, the fermentation product, or the fermentation process. So there is obviously some yeasts that are much better at cleaning up diacetyl than others. Like the, for instance, like I think everybody would know, like the Vermont strain, Mad Alchemist, or what's it from? Sorry, you have to, I'm trying to think what the name of the
Alchemist.
The Alchemist. Yeah. So that strain obviously does throw off a lot of diacetyl. So people that do work with it a lot, they'll know that, and they'll know to give it an extended period of time, after the hops are off the dry hop. But there is a good few yeast that are even very workhorse like that aren't in dried format. So I think to answer your question, I think people have to kind of engage sometimes to learn about new yeast. And I think it's part of a modern brewer's learning process, I suppose, whereas before they might have not needed to know as much. As you kind of stated before, like using the likes of USO5 where you just chuck it in and then it's done. Like, whereas now, well, I think like people are much more engaged and they want to learn about the yeast a lot more. So like the idea of just using a pack of dried yeast actually maybe not is not where it's just that easy might actually not be as entertaining to them as before. So people do like to use different yeast. They like to trial different yeast, where some people might use one yeast strain for their core beers and they know that strain because it's really reliable or it has these characteristics that they might. And then sometimes they might do a special and they're like, yeah, let's just try something crazy. Like let's get one of those Kvike yeast that ferment at 34 degrees, 35 degrees and see how it goes. So I think in terms of repeatability, you can get that from liquid yeast as well. Because it's all down to the user. But our customers would use their yeast strains maybe like over 10 to 12 times. So they do get reliability and repeatability. And we would always make sure that the yeast that they receive would have the proper viability cell count that, you know, they shouldn't run into issues in terms of off flavors or unless like it's fermented at crazy high temperature or something like that. So we try and make the product as reliable and consistent as we possibly can. So I think there is obviously consistency across all of our product range. And also I think people can always, part of the service that we provide directly or through yourselves is that we're always there on the end of the telephone to talk people through it if they're having any issue with, or if they want to go through what they should be doing ahead of the brewing. So yeah, we're always there for that. And I think like there are some dried yeast that aren't full proof either. Like a lot, there's Belgian yeast that are well known for stalling halfway through. So it's not like a one size fits all. I think every strain is completely different to another one. And then part of being a modern brewer is knowing different strains, trying different strains, and because we're all learning together, right? And you know, we're more than happy to pass on knowledge that somebody might not have and help them out as well.
Now, a question for both of you: like, what strains are you guys seeing like moving well and really, really satisfying a need for the market?
My side of it, the Brexit seems to be going really well at the moment.
That's the only Brexit going well at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's nice to be able to say that. And obviously, there's a lot of sort of Kvike style beers over here at the moment. And it's, you know, especially if people are trying to get back up and running after having time off, if they can throw that yeast in a beer and have it fermented out in 2 days, brilliant. You know, they can get beer out quicker. It's going into the casks, it's out in the pubs. So yeah, that's seen a lot of those about.
Yeah, I think it's actually funny that you mentioned that because we have a strain called Oob, which is basically a Kvike yeast that even though you ferment it at really high temperatures, it ferments really quickly and it's so clean that it's kind of like a fake lager yeast. So people do use it for lager, and we had like very, very little sales of it in 2020 and started 21. And I actually, we're all the time changing our strain lineup just to kind of suit, because like it chops and changes and stuff comes into fashion and we want to try and be ahead of, you know, trends and have what people want and stuff like that. So up to about 2 months ago, I was looking at the strains and we were adding a few strains and I was like, I might drop Oob from the lineup because we basically hadn't really sold much of it. And now in the last 2 months, definitely in the last 6 weeks, it's been one of our highest selling yeast because people are looking at making like a lager as quick as possible, grain to glass in 1 week. But I think like a lot of the customers were like brew pubs, tap rooms, all that sort of thing. So it just shows that, you know, sometimes what suits a couple of months ago doesn't suit, but then all of a sudden brewers have a requirement and that requirement might all of a sudden be, I need beer as quick as possible. And then all of a sudden, you know, sales go through the roof for one particular strain. But to answer your question, I'd say like historically our New England yeast would be our top sellers. So like the Sanders, the Saturated, the Brexit, they all sell really well. Brexit's one that was never as popular as the Saturated and Sanders, which would be like the Vermont and the London three strains. But people are really liking it now because it does have a little bit of a different flavor profile and it's kind of more attenuative. I think it produces a lot more glycerol and it gives a better mouthfeel than the other two yeasts. So that one's starting to get really popular now as well. The Kvike yeasts are getting really, they've always been quite popular. Well, since we started releasing them, but they're getting like super popular now. I think they're getting like reaching kind of mainstream kind of following because when we started doing Kvike yeasts, every can or bottle or whatever, it'd be like brewed with Kvike yeast or, you know, it'd be Kvike IPA or, you know, like that would be the set marketing point or whatever. But now we have loads of breweries that just use it as their house strain. They never advertise that they use Kvike yeast and it, you know, so it's became like an acceptable normal strains to use. And like, to be honest with you, why not? Like they have really great characteristics for a house strain and for modern, even though they're like farmhouse yeast, they have a really good, they're really good for modern brewing. The other thing that's really started selling recently was lacto is start, you know, kettle sour season has started again. So we almost sell no lacto in the winter, apart from like some random breweries. But then in the summer, everybody wants to do kettle sours. Everybody's loving the sours. So all of a sudden, like, I think our sales of lacto just goes like through the roof. So, so it's just, some yeast can be kind of all the time really busy and then some are like super seasonal.
So like, I know that you guys, the major part of your business is liquid yeast, but you've also introduced a line of dried yeast recently. Tell us a little bit about the dried yeast you offer and maybe is there really a reason for people to use liquid over dry or dry over liquid now that there are dry equivalents from you guys in the portfolio?
Yes, I think, see, when I started off, it was only meant to be a liquid yeast company, but dried yeast does, so now we're more fermentation solutions would be kind of the way I'd look at us more than just a liquid yeast company. So I think dried yeast is super important for certain types of businesses, certain types of beers. I would say if some breweries really like dry hopping during fermentation and that's their thing, that's, they like the flavor profile, like that obviously wrecks the viability of the yeast, makes it really that it's more than like you can't really repitch it. So if say that brewery wanted they basically need fresh, not fresh yeast, but they need a new thing of yeast for every brew, realistically the logistics and the price point of the liquid yeast probably isn't there yet that they could be using it for every single batch. I think dried yeast is really important if that's the route that you want to go down. the probably the main benefit of the dried yeast would be the shelf life is spectacular on it, like 2-3 years. So even like the most super hardcore liquid yeast favoring brewery, I always say to them, look, you never know. Brexit, COVID shown us that like logistics supply chain is like a very fragile process. So like you don't want to be starting brewing and waiting on liquid yeast and then it's 4 o'clock and the liquid yeast still hasn't showed up. So I think worth having dried yeast as a backup. I think there's great benefits to both products. I think if you're looking to do something really interesting and really important special, you want to use a more kind of a little bit more premium product, then the liquid yeast is great. I think if you're repitching the yeast, using it as a house yeast, I think using liquid yeast, as long as you get a few generations on it, it's to be honest with you, like liquid yeast has gotten a lot cheaper. Before it used to be nearly quadruple the price of dried yeast, but now the price is, it's not on parity, but it's like there is dried yeast on the market that would be, you know, £100, £110, where our liquid yeast might be, you know, €150, €140 for like the equivalent amount. So the difference in cost has become a lot less over time. Yeah. So I think dried yeast, very handy, stable thing to have, something to always have in the back locker. If you're under pressure for time, you can't really wait around for the brew, you know, you've gotten a big order that's came in, dried yeast is very handy for getting that stuff out. So I think in the modern brewery, there's probably realistically room for both, would be the way I'd be looking at it.
Absolutely fantastic advice. And I think you would you would also agree that you should never plan to brew your beer before the yeast is actually in your hands.
Well, you can plan, but maybe not mash in. Yes. It's just stressful sometimes. Like, obviously, we don't want anybody to, like, have a bad experience or get stuck or anything like that. But, like, sometimes it's just, you know, somebody might be calling you and they're like, look, we've already mashed in. We thought the yeast was arriving, all that kind of stuff. And like, it's something that happens ever, you know, like, shipments get delayed and that sort of stuff. So it's just it's frustrating for them, it's frustrating for us, and like everybody's kind of running around trying to sort out solutions. So it's always worth getting the yeast in hand or, you know, ordering in advance, making sure like the I think the shelf life on liquid yeast is people think that it's actually it's a lot less than it actually is. Like we found that on certain strains in particular, the viability does stay very high. So like I would be saying that you can get the yeast on site the week before. You could even get it on site 2 weeks before. Obviously you can engage with us. It's not as long as you have good refrigeration and stuff like that. Like I think at the start, a lot of breweries were trying to organize it that the yeast was like arriving the day before or on the day because they thought the yeast was going to lose viability, where that's not the case. Like it's grown in good conditions that it's very viable, so it does stay healthy for a lot of time. Those Kvike yeast in particular seem to just keep, I'm pretty sure you could leave them out in the sun for a couple of weeks and they'd be fine as well.
They do, the Kvikes do like the warm temperatures, so maybe we should send a few pitches down to Lanzarote or something and see what the crack is when they get back.
Exactly. And the breweries there would save a fortune on chilling as well. They could, they wouldn't have to have the chillers running all the time. But yeah, oh, it's interesting.
Well, very good. This has all been fantastic. I think we'll think about wrapping up. We've covered a lot of ground. Do either of you have anything that you want to add yeast related? Any tips for brewers? Any things to look out for that may be cool coming up? Now is your time to speak without me asking a question.
Well, I was just wondering, are there any plans to have any other dried yeasts down the line?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually released, I think we released 3 or 4 last year, despite the lockdown. And there's another one being released in the next month. It's already been trialed by a few breweries. And I think they haven't advertised that they used it because we still hadn't came up with a name for it. So we were the ones that were actually slowing everybody down. But keep an eye out for it. The labels are only being done, but it is it's going to be a low attenuating New England style yeast. So it'll be aimed towards like the session IPAs to leave a good bit of body behind. Attenuation, so it's maltose negative, so attenuation somewhere between 60-65%. So it leaves a lot of body. I definitely wouldn't be using it for like a double IPA, but it definitely works. It would actually probably work really well in like bitters as well and stouts and stuff like that. But yeah, it definitely leaves a lot of body, a lot of sweetness. So it's perfect for if you want to try and build some body while keeping like a nice ester profile in the beer, because I find the table beers, the session beers, are usually actually the most difficult to brew to get right, because they all seem to kind of over attenuate a little bit too much. They kind of get like a bit of a thin body, so it sometimes can get like a little bit astringent or something when you drink it, like it's too bitter or something like that. So this yeast is kind of aimed towards that side of the market. We're looking at launching a dried kvike yeast pretty soon. On the liquid side, we're definitely going to be releasing, I think it's our 7th kvike yeast into our main lineup. People really can't get enough of them, so it's great. We're going to be introducing another Belgian yeast. I think that's it for the moment. I don't know. These things just, I don't know. It's the liquid yeast we can kind of add at a whim nearly, as you know, as trends progress, the dried yeast, a little bit more planning and stuff like that, trials and all the rest of it. I think, look, by the end of the year, we'll probably have another 4 or 5 strains over the dried and liquids out, ready to go. We're chopping and changing all the time.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, you guys just have to sell them for us now.
I think your yeast sells itself, Philip, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Sorry. One thing. We are releasing homebrewers. We've only ever done the liquid homebrewer packs. We're doing the homebrewer dried packs. I don't know if much homebrewers watch the show, but we've had the most things we get emails for people demanding is homebrewer dry packs. So it's really, it seems really important to people that they want the dry yeast. So and it's also pretty good for if breweries wanted to do, like a trial or something like that before they try the dry yeast, you know, like a pilot kit. So it's nice not having to send them like a 500 gram block, you know, so it's going to be pretty cool. I'm actually really excited about that. I don't know why.
Well, perfect. Well, yeah, I think we've had a good conversation today. I think people on the old YouTube channel will enjoy this. So thank you guys for joining us today. And we look forward to getting some more WHC Lab yeast out to some customers.
Absolutely. Thanks very much.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Bye.